Welcome back to the Rebuild Podcast. My name is Gadi Notelovitz. I'm your host today, and I am joined by the greatest duo since LeBron James and Anthony Davis. No? Harrison Pullinger and Ted Smith. How are we, fellas?
Good, mate. How you doing? Good.
I gave you that accolade because we're talking about two players, LeBron James and Anthony Davis, just won an NBA title. Los Angeles Lakers are the NBA champions. How do we feel about that? Is that weird?
Fell a bit flat.
Mm. You know,
but it was definitely not weird, like going into the bubble. Oh, that's weird. LeBron and AD won. No, I think we saw that coming. But, yeah, you could say the weird thing about the end was Jimmy Butler's output, but he was just gassed. So, no, not too odd, HP.
It's never fun when a final series is decided by blowout.
Mm.
And so, I don't know, when no fans are there, you're right, Ted, it just felt really flat. And there was just so many unlikable characters on the Lakers that they win and you sit there and you're like, cool.
Yeah. I guess what I mean by weird is I found it strange looking at LeBron James in a Lakers jersey as an NBA champion. And I know we should be used to that by now because he's been there for two seasons. But, like, we know James as a champion with Miami and in Cleveland, and this one was just like, oh, shit, he's done it three times now.
Do you think that's just a result of everything that this year was, though? The fact that it was played in a bubble, the loss of Kobe at the start of the year, the fact there's no fans in the finals. It's like maybe take a step back and be like, I get it. No, that is really weird.
Mm.
when you put it like that, everything that's happened, it is strange. But I think in the future when we look back, it'll be game five, two great athletes, one all-time athlete, potential GOAT versus someone who's like the people's champ in Jimmy Butler, just going blow for blow for blow for blow deep into the fourth. We'll remember Jimmy Butler's two big triple-doubles to keep the series alive, but it when we look back again, it'll be LeBron, the cherry on top for what has already been a great career.
It's funny looking at them as NBA champions and realizing that in any series, the most they lost was two games, and that was in the NBA Finals, where for the most part, apart from two, as you say, Jimmy Butler masterclasses, they were too good for the Miami Heat. And obviously there were injuries involved, but I feel like during the regular season, we discounted the Lakers, putting it down to, well, the Clippers are going to come in postseason and the Bucks are still better than the Lakers in the regular season. And then come the seeding games, we were going, these Lakers can't figure it out. They can't score points. LeBron and AD can't have good games together. In the playoffs, people were picking the Portland Trailblazers to upset them. Maybe not like super smart people, but people. And all throughout this whole process, The Lakers have been doubted, and for no real reason other than we expected them to fall short. Do they kind of deserve more credit? Were they like weirdly disrespected? Obviously, LeBron in his post game speech, post finals MVP speech, said Rob Pelinka wants his respect, Frank Vogel wants his respect, like a nation wants their respect. I want my damn respect too. Were they disrespected?
I think they were, and I think so many people came out after the finals and were like, oh, they didn't go over the Clippers though. Well, they didn't have to. Clippers were knocked out earlier. They didn't beat anyone good. How many times have we heard that? All you can do is beat the teams ahead of you. In 5 years, you're not going to say, oh, LeBron was 3-6 in NBA finals and 1-0 in NBA bubble finals. You're not. You're just going to say he's a four-time NBA champion, four-time finals MVP. I don't know. I don't think people are giving that the respect that it deserves. Yeah, it was a weird year, but hey, they beat everyone they played.
It's a bit of how many times can you say someone's great for over a decade now? Like, how many accolades can one person get? He's done absolutely everything. Any question basketballers asked of any basketball player ever, LeBron's answered. And that's the reason why he's held in such high regard to the point where people want to put him next to Jordan. But for those reasons, people are like, well, I want something a bit different. I don't know if they expected Portland to beat the Lakers, but they wanted to. On this podcast, in my heart of hearts, I didn't think Miami should be favourites against the Lakers, but I wanted Jimmy Butler to beat LeBron, the established king. You wanted him to fall. So That's where the disrespect comes in. It's just that we've seen this play out before, but because he is so great. So,
well, let's talk a little bit about that greatness. As you say, four rings, four finals MVPs. He's done it now for three different franchises. James averaged 29.8 points a game, 11.8 rebounds, 8.5 assists, 10 finals appearances, 4-6, as you say, compared to Michael Jordan, who went 6-0 famously.
Did he? I've never heard that.
I feel like I'm like just repeating things, but like, look, we have to have the conversation. For some people, LeBron will never get there, can't get there, by the fact that simply he has failed in the biggest stage. Is LeBron James any closer to Michael Jordan? Can he get closer? Is there even a race, or is he past Jordan? Is he already the better player?
I don't think he can catch Jordan, and I don't think it matters if he finishes his career with seven championships. I don't think it matters, because the thing for me is Jordan was a beast on both ends of the floor. He's one of three people who've won a Defensive Player of the Year award and an MVP. He was regularly one of the best defenders in the league as a guard. That's something that LeBron doesn't have. And something that LeBron's never done. And the fact that he's played this long, it's incredible. There's nothing taken away from his career to say you're not as good as Jordan. Like, in my eyes, he's a very clear second greatest of all time.
To me, what it feels like is LeBron's better than Jordan in the same way John Stockton is better than Steph Curry. A better point guard than Steph Curry. Like, John Stockton can do more things on the basketball court that you expect from a top-end point guard, but Curry will just go out and score 40 points more often. Like, Jordan was a better scorer, yes, but the two markers that he was clearly better than LeBron is will to win and just mental edge. Like, he just had that hunger to the point where it was infectious. He's an inspirational leader in that he inspired his players to be better, but through such a negative way. But he still brought people up with him. Whereas, like, Jordan is absolutely certain he's the best ever, where I think LeBron thinks he might be better than Jordan. You know, just that edge.
I also think there's something in, and as we all do, we discount the, like, Washington Wizards stint, but there's something in every highlight you see is Michael Jordan in a Chicago Bulls jersey. And I think that matters when you talk about the greatest of all time and the greatest careers. While it's incredibly impressive to win finals MVP and championships on three different teams, I think that, for me anyway, that detracts a little bit from your career when you bounce around the league.
Do you think that could change moving forward, though? Because before LeBron went to Miami, an established superstar stayed there, a couple of outliers, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. But in the past, like, if a team thought you were the franchise player, you were the franchise player. But now you look at Kawhi Leonard, you look at Paul George, these top-end players are saying, you know what, I've got a better opportunity to win somewhere else. I'm just going to bounce. So, you know, maybe in 15, 20 years, it's just so common that champions will leave a championship team.
Maybe, but I also think there's still going to be the player like Steph Curry that doesn't, and the team builds around him and they say, you are this franchise and our future is built around keeping you and keeping you happy. And I don't know, maybe towards the end of his career he goes somewhere else. So it might happen, but I still think that there is a place for one team superstars, and I think the more that big name players jump around the league, the more that will matter.
But if those big-name players jump around the league, say Kawhi Leonard at the Clippers doesn't end up winning a title, say KD goes to Brooklyn, doesn't win a title, and then in 5-10 years' time, we look back and we go, LeBron was the only superstar that consistently left, joined a new team, and they were successful. Does that then add to his legacy? Because I know what you're saying with Jordan, as in the only place he needed to be was Chicago because he was good enough to will whoever was around him to an NBA title, and he didn't need to leave the Bulls. With LeBron, I mean, once he didn't have that in Cleveland and he did make the move, surely this is the right way, if you're thinking about legacy, for him to kind of compete, because it's so different. It's so in contrast to what Jordan's done and did, that moving forward with the likes of Kawhi and Kevin Durant and whoever else moves wherever they do, because it does seem like that's the trend now. Could in 10 years' time LeBron's achievements in Cleveland, in Miami, in LA seem more impressive to us?
I think surface-wise, yes, but when you take the time to have a little bit of a deeper look at it, no, I think it'll detract. Because you look at, he left Cleveland, went to Miami, formed the super team, cool. I don't want to shout conspiracy, but over the next couple of years, Cleveland got every number one pick to build the perfect package for LeBron to get back, to build a team for him to like construct his next championship team, which he did. He then went to LA, cleansed the roster and built again. I think if he had have gone to LA and won with the scrubs that he had, I think, yeah. But when you go in and you retool with exactly what you want around you, I think it detracts.
Okay, but like, let's look at that decision to go to LA, right? When he joined, as you said, a bunch of scrubs with a familiarity with losing, let's
say. Pelicans fans are just fuming.
No, but okay, Brandon Ingram was a bright spot, but yeah, he obviously ended up leaving. Then he takes a roster, essentially gets rid of half of it to get AD, who by all accounts is a top five, at least top 10 player in the NBA. But you look at the rest of the roster, and it's a conversation we had in the offseason, they did not recruit very well. And that roster around LeBron and AD weren't very good. And LeBron was still the best player on that team. Like, he was not carried by AD. He was certainly helped by AD, and he couldn't have done it without him. But LeBron was still the best player on that team and made all of those. Let's be it, like Alex Caruso should not be an effective starter in the NBA Finals. Danny Green is paid far too much for what he is. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is made to look like a helpful addition to an NBA team, which I'd argue on most other teams he would not be that. So surely he gets some credit. I know you're saying that Cleveland was set up for him to succeed there, but surely LA wasn't.
Like, he brings in the same type of player everywhere he goes, and it's not about, oh, you know what, Danny Green's not that good, Dwight Howard was a weird pickup, JaVale McGee, et cetera, because these are guys that he chooses. And I think he has a much more active role in the front office than any other player in the league, because it's the same type of players in every situation. It's the reason that there's a Kyle Korver, a J.R. Smith, a George Hill, and then you move to the next one and you got the same kind of players. It's those veteran guys that he goes out and searches for. I don't think you can then say, oh, no, but he took the team that he built, which was no help to him, because they're the guys that he wants and they're always the guys that he wants. Why could he not take a mentor role when he moved to LA? He didn't. They rebuilt with the same veterans that he's had since he moved to Miami. In fact, even in early days Cleveland, it was still your Zydrunas Ilgauskas, Shaq, Antoine Jamison. It was the same kind of players where it's this veteran smart head, and then we look back and we go, oh, his team's crap. Every move is made with his green light, I would say.
There was a need, though, to get a second star into LA. And
absolutely.
With Anthony Davis being there, like, I take your point, but I'd argue that, like, there was no choice. Like, he doesn't have time. Like, he's a 35-year-old. He doesn't have time to wait until Brandon Ingram in 2-3 years' time turns into a guy that he can rely upon. He doesn't have time to figure out whether Lonzo Ball's going to be that guy or not. Like, he had to make winning moves now, and I think the Lakers needed that as a franchise. That's what I'd argue. I'd also argue that he learned, and the most impressive part to me about this whole Lakers thing is that he did this in the first year partnered up with AD. In the first year, they came out in the regular season and won games, and they did it in the postseason, and they won that title. And I don't know if that's maybe a lesson that he learned from obviously failing with the Miami Heat in that first year, teaming up with superstars and it not working out. You sound very LeBron hatery right now. And no, I'm not even a huge LeBron fan.
We're comparing LeBron and Jordan right now, right? And I think HP, what he's saying is that LeBron, it's going to detract from his legacy eventually when we sit back and realize that he was given allowances that no other player has ever had. The ability to tinker his squad around him, to pick the soldiers to fall in line and follow suit, where Jordan won, like, his last title was completely different to his first title, and he didn't have a say in most of those roster moves.
Yeah,
he hated some of the roster moves that Chicago made while he was there.
Yeah, and like, I'm not saying that what he did was wrong. I'm not saying that bringing in AD was the wrong decision. The win now mode was the wrong decision. I say that I don't think it adds anything to his legacy to have done it in different locations because of the way he did it.
He's sick at basketball, man. And I just don't think I should feel bad just because I'd pick Jordan in a game 7 over LeBron.
Yeah.
No, that's fair. Talking about his all-star teammate, after AD wins his first title, I couldn't help notice that there was just like, there's very little negative narrative around it. The fact that he forced his way out of the Pelicans, the fact that he had had little to no success ever with New Orleans, that his injury problems were a big part of why they didn't move forward as a franchise. Obviously, a franchise that didn't make great decisions in terms of who they put around him and what they were able to do. But he forced his way out of a small market team to join the Lakers and potentially the greatest player of all time or second best player of all time. And there's no talk in the same way there was about KD or some of the other stars that have moved around the league. Why?
That's an excellent point, man. I haven't even thought about that, the KD comparison.
Anthony Davis pisses me off. And the way he signed a max extension, demanded a trade, and forced his way out, I hate that in a player. KD left in free agency. It's his choice. I'm okay with it. Yes, I don't think he joined the right team. I think he, like, yeah, there's the argument for he took the coward's way out, he joined a stacked roster, whatever. But everything AD has done up to this point rubs me the wrong way. And I don't like and I don't understand why we're just ignoring the fact that he left a regular season game with the Pelicans midway through the game, that he wore that "That's All Folks" t-shirt, all this bratty crap that he did, which, like, suddenly we don't remember. I don't get it.
Well, I think a lot of the hatred when KD left, you need to remember that OKC were up 3-1 against Golden State the year before he left, right? So OKC fans would have been making a lot more noise on social media in comparison to Pelicans fans, who I think they're close to the worst when it comes to TV viewing throughout the regular season. So there's that. But you're right, HP. KD did it the right way. Yeah. He left through free agency, and people hate him because he chose a team where he thought it was most likely for him to win. When you say it out loud, it's like, well, that makes complete sense.
Yeah. I think there's a couple things. So for one, KD joining Golden State, it wasn't just criticized because people were like, that's a weak move. It was criticized because people wanted to see the end of the Golden State dominance. Like, they were like, no, they're already good. We don't need, like, them to be, like, we don't want to kill competitiveness. So I think, like, there was that part to it. But then also, in the same way, we don't hear the same criticism when Dame Lillard has a bad game versus Steph Curry has a bad game. It's just like, is Anthony Davis as big of a superstar as Kevin Durant? Like, is that maybe a sign that he isn't that guy yet? Like, he's not a top five guy? Like, obviously, ability-wise and potential-wise, he's a freak of nature. But
commentary pointed it out in the last game. Like, when AD was backing into Iguodala, he was like, imagine if they put Iguodala on peak Tim Duncan or Charles Barkley. Like, that ain't happening. And the two boards, like, they're the kind of things that detract, right?
He might be saved by the fact that, obviously, the narrative after the Lakers win a title is all around LeBron James. And it's not, let's take a look at Anthony Davis and what this means for his legacy. But, I mean, yeah, he's got his first title. He's, what, 27 years old? He set himself up for probably prolonged success in Los Angeles and wherever else he ends up. But it's funny to me that I've not seen a single negative comment or talking head in the US even bring it up.
You know what I think it is? I wrote this down under my little notes here, is no one cares about him.
It's his voice. It's so flat. Like, when he talks, it's reminds me of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who, when he came to the league, was the best player of all time, right? Just rocked it. But because he was so boring, the NBA was affected. So I think the Lakers are lucky to have LeBron as their out-and-out best player of this final series, because from a PR perspective, you don't want to rest. You don't want to put the weight of your organization on AD. He just does not ring true on camera or on microphone.
So, like, he had to keep the monobrow because he had no personality.
Oh, his mono personality, yes, is
exactly.
Well. Monotone.
Talking about a guy who definitely does have personality, we should touch on the Heat, who obviously took the Lakers to six games, thanks to, in large part, Jimmy Butler finally, I guess, being freed and given the role that he's sort of been asking for and claiming that he can take on. When we look at this Miami Heat team, obviously we did not think they were contenders going into this season. We saw them as, and we discussed this leading into the postseason, they're the team no one wants to play, but we kind of thought someone would beat them. And it took until the NBA Finals for someone to be able to do that. This Heat team has a ton of cap space going into next season. Jimmy Butler and role players, does he need another star or does he need better role players? And if you do go after a star to partner up with Jimmy Butler, how careful do you need to be that it's the right kind of player, that it's not a guy who's going to be the new guy in Miami?
Well, do you think Tyler Hero and Bam Adebayo can become stars while Jimmy Butler's prime is still a thing?
Yeah.
I think they can. It's just whether or not, like, so you're basically taking Bam and Tyler, who are still on, essentially getting paid peanuts. And you're going, okay, we can wait for that, or we can expect it in the next year or two, or we can just like get someone on, what, $20, $25 million a year. They can probably afford another max player, I think.
See, the thing that concerns me about that chat is we don't know what's going to happen with the salary cap in the next couple of years. Right now, the salary cap is going to be affected. People were not watching the finals. People were not tuning in for anything after the play-in games. They're talking about there might not be fans for most of next season. We don't even know how long next season's going to be. Down the line, the salary cap is not going to go up the rate it has. Don't put yourself in a position where you lose Bam or Tyler Hero when it comes to their contract extensions by signing an older player to maybe help Jimmy Butler. We know these guys work with him. I don't think they're a star away. I think they're a little bit of time away, and I think it's double down on the role players you have around you.
Oh, he's such a fiscal conservative. It's unbelievable.
Harrison's got the Excel spreadsheet out with projections.
But it makes sense, right? Like, save money in the kitty for the players you definitely want to keep. And who would not definitely want to keep Hero and Bam after what we just saw? Like, you know, people freaking out that Hero didn't make first rookie team. But look, the Hero that we saw was basically a second-year player, right? Like, he got drafted a long time ago. This is the latest a season's ever finished. So kind of reminds me, not in playing style, but just in terms of leap from what we thought that the player was in the NBA draft to the end of their first season. Donovan Mitchell, you know, he was drafted similar spot, like a mid-first round.
Yeah, I think Mitchell was 14 and Hero was 13, I think.
Yeah.
Could be making that up.
And like, Miami, I dare say, history says that they will back their recruits, right? They like their rookies. But I guess the one thing that I would say in terms of looking at a free agent, maybe the point guard position, just because the Dragon is an old Dragon now. I think he'll be 35, 36.
And a free agent Dragon.
Next year. And he's coming off a foot injury. I know we don't know how bad it is. We know he played in game six, but it's NBA finals. Maybe he has 2 or 3 weeks off throughout the regular season. So, you know, there's some options there at free agency at the point guard position, and maybe they look there. But for sure, I'm with Harrison. You just double down on their future. They've made some good picks.
It's interesting you say that with Donovan Mitchell and Tyler Hero. I got the same, like, similar vibe with the hype as when Jason Tatum was going through the playoffs during his rookie season. And not that I'm expecting Tyler Hero to be dropping 30 by year three, but his composure, his like uncanny sense of the moment, the fact that he doesn't get phased, like that's something that, like, he's 18 and he's already doing this. It's incredible what he could look like in 3-4 years when it is time to pay him. That could be a max player.
Yeah.
And it just scares me to ruin that situation.
Wiggins and Kat couldn't handle the heat that Butler brought to the kitchen, right? Where Tyler Hero seems to be thriving in those conditions. So, yeah, back yourselves if you might.
Yeah, they've struck gold, Miami, in more ways than one. In more ways than just the recruitment of and drafting of a guy like Tyler Hero. They've found a balance. Like, everything they got this postseason was above expectation. They finished fifth. They got Jimmy Butler, proving that he's a tier one superstar surrounded by the right guys. They found a rookie in Tyler Herro who is, there is no situation too big for him. And when Bam was healthy, he was one of the best players in the league in the postseason. So I take your point. They might not actually need the star. They might just need another year and surround Jimmy with the right guys again. So let's move on from the NBA Finals, but let's not move on completely from what was an unprecedented few months in the NBA spent in a Disney World bubble in Orlando. Should probably mention,
that's so weird.
Shout out Dwight Howard for bringing a title to Orlando, right? Harrison?
Wow. Ouch. You had to go, not just punch me in the head, but you had to just pull back that other layer and really kick me in the nuts.
I just worked out that that's the only way Orlando is going to bring a title home.
Yep.
Is if you bring the NBA.
Wow, I hate you both.
But let's let's have a little talk about what we saw in the bubble, not only in the postseason, but in those seeding games where there was obviously chaos, the Phoenix Suns going undefeated and not making the postseason. We saw the rise of Bol Bol and the very quick descent of Bol Bol as a relevant person in the NBA discussion. Let's do some quick awards. So if we're handing out the MVP of the bubble, and there was an MVP of the seeding games, but taking into the postseason as well, who is your MVP, Harrison?
I had to keep with what they gave, and I picked Damian Lillard. Oh. What he was able to achieve, I know he didn't get it done in the postseason, but he was never going to. Just his ability to will that team into the playoffs was insane for me.
Yeah. Devin Booker, best player on the team with the best record. Still undefeated.
Still undefeated, you're right. I'll be the boring guy. I went with LeBron. He achieved what they came to Orlando to do.
Yeah.
So that's how I said it. Rookie of the year. We all went Tyler Herro, please tell me.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, well, we just spoke about him, so we're not going to speak more about him. Defensive player of the year.
I have it written down reluctantly AD, just because I was like, can I give it to anyone else? And I could not think of anyone else.
I went with Marcus Smart. Smart locked down basically every player on every other team that he had to play. He went from marking Joel Embiid for stretches to Fred Van Fleet to Siakam. He did everything he was asked to and more. He's my pick.
Can you talk us through why you hate Anthony Davis as a defensive player?
I don't hate Anthony Davis as a defensive player. I just feel like he gets... There were so many times where he was racking up blocks from like really dumb drives by the Heat. They just drive into him and throw up a layup.
He's heaps good at blocking shots.
He's very good at blocking shots.
I like elite defenders to be angry, you know?
Yeah.
Like in your face, a bit of tenacity. They're all adjectives that don't belong to AD.
Agreed.
And I assume coach of the year, Eric Spoelstra.
Has to be.
Philippines, Bill Belichick. Yep.
And how about just the concept of the play-in tournament? Like, obviously, as Harrison, you mentioned, the viewing numbers. Like, obviously, when there's more markets, there's going to be more eyes. But there was considerably more interest in the bubble when it was seeding games and chance at the postseason than the postseason itself. Are we for a play-in tournament kind of format going forward?
I think I am. I definitely think there needs to be a little restructuring. I think the way it was at the moment was really unfair to the team that had fought their way into eighth. It was basically, yeah, you got there, but we're going to give you every chance to not still be there.
Yeah.
And I think there are ways that they can tinker with that, which would make it better. But I'm definitely for it. It made the last couple of games interesting, something which doesn't happen often.
One thing they can't change about that playing game is make sure it's played
in Orlando?
When the NFL is not up and running.
Yeah.
I think, you know, historically, the NBA really struggles against the NFL. Usually, I think the finals are around the time of the All-Pro game, and the Pro Bowl usually rates better than the NBA finals. So you don't want to mess with the juggernaut that is the NFL. So I was surprised that they actually played the game on a Sunday in the US.
Is that a thing?
Yeah.
No, wait. The NBA wraps up in June every year.
Yeah, okay, so maybe not head-to-head, but, like, I know...
Right.
Just yeah, sorry, right, sorry, okay. I misspoke. But, the Pro Bowl gets more eyes right. than the NBA Finals. Brings me to my point. Playing it on a US Sunday was wild to me. You need to play those games on a Saturday and then the Monday. I don't care what it was before or where you plan to have Game 7, but you just don't go up against the juggernaut.
You hear that, NBA? You hear it?
It's a no-brainer. Bend the knee.
Okay, so that was the bubble. The bubble was fun. The bubble was fun, I think. Like, yeah. That was weird.
Don't say it like we disagree.
No, because like it was I'm just thinking now, like when we were kind of discussing the NBA returning, like who would have thought we wouldn't have any COVID troubles? Like at all.
Not one.
Not one. So let's talk about the season itself, because obviously before we got to the bubble, there was a big old break. And before that, there was actual basketball played normally with fans and stuff. If taking into account what we did see then, what we saw in the bubble, what is one thing that you loved about this NBA season?
I love that it came back. Let's think back, man, before the basketball came. Like, oh my God.
Feels like long, a lifetime ago, though.
Long days. Like, I think maybe the MLS kicked a few balls before the basketball tipped off, but that answered the age-old question. Would I watch MLS if it was literally the only sport in the world? And the answer is no, right? So when the NBA came back, it was the first step back to some kind of normality. And I just going to what you just said prior, the fact that they got to finish it all, thank you, basketball. I didn't know how much you meant to me. I'm glad it came back.
That's beautiful.
That's really nice. I liked that it kind of felt like a rebirth in coaching matters. And coaches started making the difference between wins and losses, which I don't think we'd seen in years.
Such a coach answer.
But for real, though, yeah, I don't think we'd properly seen that since, like, your Pat Riley's had moved on, your Phil Jackson's had moved on. Now it's like you got so many difference makers on the bench, which I just loved. I loved that a game plan can topple a good team.
Any coach pop up on your radar this year that you didn't have too much knowledge about in previous years?
The Memphis rookie coach, Taylor Jenkins. I didn't know who he was. I'd never heard of him before. I didn't even know what college he was coaching at. But he did such an awesome job with that team. And like the fact that you can get a young coach that no one's ever heard of and he can actually step into that role and make a difference, I loved it.
Okay, my answer's a lot less, maybe a bit less serious, let's just say. I love that Dion Waiters got cut from the Miami Heat for taking edibles on a plane and then ended up as an NBA champion by the end of the season with the Los Angeles Lakers. I love that.
I love that he was definitely going to get a ring then, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, the Miami Lakers.
Dion played no part in the Lakers' title, but...
We salute you.
Good work. Okay, so that was the 2019-20 NBA season done, wrapped up. And the new season, we don't even know when that's going to start, but let's talk about it.
Yeah, okay.
All right, let's do a way too early contender talk. Now, I'm going to list some teams. You tell me if any of them don't belong or any should be added to what I say. And this is in no particular order.
Contender to win the championship.
To win the championship.
Okay.
The Los Angeles Lakers.
Yes.
The Los Angeles Clippers.
Yes.
The Denver Nuggets.
Yes.
The Golden State Warriors.
Yes.
The Miami Heat.
Yes.
The Boston Celtics.
Oh, yes.
The Philadelphia 76ers. Milwaukee Bucks. And the Toronto Raptors.
Yes, give me some.
That's the list. Is there anyone that is on that list that you don't think belongs or anyone that should be added?
I think we need to put a few question marks there just because we don't know what the teams will look like. We don't know what the Clippers will look like, but they will have Kawhi. We don't know what the Sixers will look like, but they'll probably stay the same because they did get Doc as coach. I don't trust the Raptors and I don't trust the Bucks. I don't trust the Bucks. Why would I? But let me, why would I trust them?
Let me preface this whole discussion with the fact that normally when we do these contender discussions and stories and whatever, we end up having to like force ourselves to add a couple teams on, being like, yeah, well, if everything were to go right for this team, maybe they could do it. But generally, there's only two or three teams that can actually win a title in a year. This past season, be it circumstances or just whatever, there were a bunch of teams that realistically could have won the title. The fact that the Miami Heat got to the NBA Finals and were a realistic shot at beating the Lakers is proof enough that there's a fair bit of competition for the title next year. In whatever context that is, whether there's fans or no fans or a bubble or whatever, we have to take these teams more seriously than we did.
Most of the NBA world got their wish in that Golden State wasn't there, right? That's what opened things up more than COVID, more than the bubble. The fact that the dominant team from the West for half a decade were sitting the pine through injury, and it was a lot of two-headed beasts on teams this year instead of like one or two teams with three guns. So,
well, let's start with Golden State. Obviously, one of the two sort of like, I'd put it as one of the two sleeping giants, right? There's the Golden State Warriors and there's the Brooklyn Nets in terms of teams that weren't relevant this year that will be relevant next year. So the Golden State Warriors obviously still have Steph Curry, still have Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, Andrew Wiggins, if you want to include him in the discussion, and the number two overall pick. If we're looking at, first of all, what the Warriors are right now, and if you were just to add whoever they took with the number one, if they do take someone with the number two overall pick, what they would be, is that good enough to contend for an NBA title?
I think it absolutely is. And we're going to see throughout next season, I think they're going to be insanely underwhelming in the regular season. I don't think they're going to perform to the point where people start writing them off. But I just think that will just be how Steve Kerr is going to coach this team as they start to age. He went through the exact same thing with the San Antonio Spurs when he was a player. He went through the exact same thing with the Chicago Bulls when he was a player. He does not care what happens until the playoffs. The Golden State Warriors, I think, would be my title favorite.
What? That's good pedigree. Spurs, Bulls, Warriors.
Oh, unbelievable pedigree.
That's a big call. And obviously, this year worked out perfectly for them. Like, as much as, sure, they'd like to be competing every year, when you've got injured players in Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, they did not care about winning NBA basketball games this year. It worked out. They got the number two overall pick. And they also got to try out a bunch of guys for who's going to be valuable to us off the bench next season. They got really good contributions from a guy like Eric Pascal, who not a lot of people saw coming as a rookie. Damian Lee, Steph Curry's brother-in-law, showed that he can really shoot. And will be better when he's got people like Steph Curry and Klay Thompson to take attention off of him as a shooter. I agree. I think, like, whatever, if they stick with this roster, it works. If they don't and they try to package that number two pick and maybe Wiggins or maybe Draymond Green, I don't know, for another star, whatever they do will probably work as well. I think there's a lot of people weirdly, I think it's recency bias in the NBA. We can't really focus on two things at once, and we're watching people play basketball and we're forgetting about people that aren't playing basketball. Steph Curry's a top five player in the league. Klay Thompson's the second best shooter in the league behind Steph Curry. Draymond Green, when locked in, is very good on the defensive end. Like, they've got the pieces here, right?
Just Google NBA Finals and look at the list over the last, you know, a few years.
Yeah.
They're an unbelievable team. And whatever they do, you're right, they're going to have the ingredients there for a championship because it's been tried and tested with said ingredients.
They've Curry, also
Klay, and probably Draymond.
They've also got something that a lot of the teams that were contending this year don't have, which is an elite backcourt. A lot of the teams that competed were obviously had their strength in the front court on the wings. Steph Curry and Klay Thompson are a whole different ball game, right? The Rockets had Russ and Harden, but like those are two players that don't know how to play together, and that's why they weren't in my contender list. That's why Portland wasn't in my contender list.
I didn't even notice.
I know I'm a hater. I don't care. I'm a realist. That's what I am. Harrison, you've got some questions about some teams that I rattled off there.
I need to add one more to your list.
Ooh.
I think the Dallas Mavericks are a contender.
Nice.
I think they have the best young player in the NBA They already have the best offense in the NBA. And as long as Kristaps Porzingis is healthy, Rick Carlisle is one of the best tacticians we've ever seen coach in the NBA. He is going to figure out how to make Luka the most efficient version of himself, like he did with Dirk Nowitzki for 20 years. There is not too much to tinker with, and this team has a little bit of cap space as well, but there's not too much to tinker with before the Dallas Mavericks are an elite team with one of the best bucket getters in a playoff situation in Luka.
Defensively, though, like sometimes it looked like they'd struggle to stop a team full of Tyrion Lannisters.
This is adding to my point, though. Rick Carlisle had someone like Tim Hardaway Jr. actually playing defense. What do they do with a little bit of tinkering to add a defender or two, or just like some competent two-way stars?
It's cheaper to add a top-end defender than it is to a top-end offensive player.
Yeah, Dallas, I left them off the list. And I think I'm fine leaving them off the list just because I think the jump they'd have to make would be so big. However, by the end of the offseason, that might be a different discussion. What if they've made those moves?
What if Porzingis gets 3, 4, 5% better as well? That's within the realm of possibility. He's only played one full season from a run of bad leg injuries.
So. And the other thing is that, so he is an elite rim protector, someone who is an elite defensive anchor and has the potential to be a really, really good defensive anchor is Dwight Powell. Dwight Powell was missing. Maxi Kleber came out of his shell in the bubble to actually look like he has the potential to be a really, really competent two-way starter. There's some pieces on that roster which I really, really love. And
sounds like you really, really love them. You can jump ship.
And there's
Orlando in trouble?
Oh yeah, because of Memphis. But no, I think Dallas are gonna be dangerous next year.
And are they bumping someone off your list or off Guardy's list rather? There's some teams you don't think that'll make 30 rattle.
I don't think so. I think Denver, LA, the two LA teams, Golden State and Dallas, would be the five that I'd take if I was in the West. But Looking at the East, I don't think there's that many.
Yeah.
Looking at another young team that did make the list in the West, the Denver Nuggets, we know Nikola Jokic is a superstar, and we saw Jamal Murray figure out how to play like one in the postseason. Obviously, this is relying on Jamal Murray actually being that guy and it not being a postseason anomaly, I guess. But with Paul Millsap's $30 million a year contract coming off the books this offseason, is there something Denver need to do in the market, or is this a situation where you go, we're banking on Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic and Michael Porter being that third scorer, or Gary Harris finally living up to the contract that they gave him a couple years ago after a season where he averaged, 17.5 points a game? What do Denver need to do to make the leap?
I think the first thing they need to do is they actually need to let their youth develop. They've taken flyers in the draft in back-to-back years. And maybe Bol Bol becomes a contributor. I don't think he's going to be a star, but he might be a contributor. Michael Porter could be a star. There's another year there with that team, but if you're saying what do they need a two-way shooting guard. And he needs to have
a
bit of
Gary
height.
Harris.
Yeah, Gary Harris
is supposed to be Gary Harris.
Yeah,
right?
He's just too short. I don't like
that. Brutal.
Like, two short guards doesn't work. We see that in Portland. Mm. And even if Gary Harris is defensive, it doesn't really matter because as soon as there's a slightly bigger guard, they're in trouble. In a perfect world, a Chris Middleton at the two, I think, would make that team really, really good.
Mm. Should we get a trade going? Jamal Murray, Chris Middleton. Who says no?
I think Milwaukee definitely say yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
100%. I agree. Okay. So that's the Nuggets. That's the Warriors. Looking at the Lakers and Clippers. Lakers, I feel, have quite a lot of room for improvement here because I don't think their roster was necessarily built to win a championship. They had two really good players and a bunch of role players that didn't really make sense on paper that they should be able to improve upon. They should be able to get some vets on some below market prices who want to get a ring before they retire or just want to be in LA, which is lovely. If we're looking at them, I think they've got like a scary amount of room for improvement, as do the Clippers, in terms of if they get the culture right in that locker room, they're still the best team on paper, no?
Absolutely. Whether Paul George is there or not, who knows? But you're right. If their chemistry is right, that yeah, they're absolutely the best team. And that's an extra year under the belt of Zubats, who I think will be Nick Vucevic in no time flat.
It's a big call.
It's a big call, but he's got all the skills. I think the Clippers will be fine. For the Lakers, they need to find the hungry vets that haven't done it yet. Because can you imagine what Dwight Howard's going to be like now he's got a championship? Write him off.
Outside the bubble, he's just going to be dangerous because he won't be wearing a mask, won't get the vaccine.
That's what I mean. Like, how can he be any worse?
At least he's protected in the bubble, though.
Now he's won a ring, he's going to be a douche.
Yeah. Okay.
And one other thing. You said earlier that Dragic is an unrestricted free agent, which to me maybe puts a question mark on Miami. I know Nunn started a lot of games from them this year, but when Dragic was fit and coming off the bench, he was running that second unit really well. We saw what happened to Miami's starting team when they planted him in there throughout the playoffs. So, you know, can a Miami Heat team with Nunn at the point guard position win a title? I'd say no.
I think if Dragic were to go, they'd fill that point guard position because they've got some money to play with. So let's look at the East. We discussed Miami a little bit earlier, so we won't touch on them. Philadelphia 76ers, broken record, need shooting. They just need shooting. They just need shooting. Please God, get them some shooting, and then they'll be a good team.
Yeah,
sure.
Who? Yeah?
Yeah.
Like, that's it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who are you serving up for Philly, Guardiola?
Who?
Yeah. Who do they add?
Who do they add?
Yeah,
I don't care. Someone to shoot the basketball. Is Davis Bertans an unrestricted free agent?
Yeah. They can't afford him. That's He's going to get a monster contract somewhere. But, like, there are Duncan Robinsons, Kyle Guys. What's the little balding white dude in Toronto? Matt Thomas or something?
Yes.
There are those guys in the draft every year. They just need to be smarter with who they draft.
Let's talk about the Celtics a little bit. We saw Jason Tatum take the leap into like superstardom this postseason. He's clearly the guy in Boston, which I think they struggled with for a little bit there at the start of the season, having Tatum and Brown and Kemba and Gordon Hayward. It's a lot of guys that are getting paid a lot of money, all of them. And then you've always got like Marcus Smart being like, I want to hit threes. But obviously, Tatum is the guy now. Jaylen Brown is like the best complementary piece you could really hope for. You've got two young guys who can play offense and defense. Tatum, elite at both levels. Brown, elite defensively and really good on offense. I think Boston, given how much they're paying Kemba and Gordon Hayward, you assume is going to opt into his player option, which he'll get like $34 million or something. You'd want a little bit more out of them. Kemba was a really positive influence and came up big in the clutch at times, but he's not getting paid to play one quarter of basketball. He needs to be a bit more helpful, yeah? You can agree? No?
I don't know. You look at the difference between what Kyrie was and what Kemba has been for the young guys, and like maybe it's just addition by subtraction.
But is that a low bar to have? Like, is that just being like, well, he's not Kyrie, so this is great. Like, there's lots of guys who won't be a detriment in the locker room.
He
can get you a bucket in the fourth quarter?
He didn't get him buckets in the fourth quarter in the games that mattered, though, right? Like, he struggled throughout the last few playoff games.
But the last few playoff games, Miami went out with one goal, and that was do not let Kemba shoot the ball.
All right. Well,
Toronto were playing box and one chasing Kemba. Like, there's clearly a lot he adds on the court, which makes opposing coaches say, we can't let this guy get 20, because if he gets 20, Tatum gets 30. And if Tatum gets 30, Jaylen Brown gets 25.
And you're right. It feels problematic that we're picking on Kemba and not Hayward, right? Like, Hayward, his contract should be under more.
But Hayward's splits are actually really good. Like, he's a very effective basketball player still.
I don't think Hayward will be in Boston for the whole of the next season. It's one of those like insanely valuable contracts for one of the like teams that need to meet that 70% of the cap room. They'll take that 1 year on, and then they'll just have the free agency money after that. I don't I think Boston will double down and get role players or maybe get a center.
They need a center.
Yeah.
For reasons that are beyond Gordon Hayward's control, like the injury, he's not the player that Boston signed, right? He's not Utah Gordon Hayward.
No, but
he's the guy that earned that contract, and Gordon Hayward hasn't been that. And he might get there because those kind of horrific injuries take some time. Yeah, you're back on the court, but you're not your full self for 1, 2, sometimes 2.5 years. So he could come good, but, yeah, he's a bit of a deficit.
I think it's a combination of things though, right? Like he was the guy in Utah, comes to Boston, gets injured, comes back, and he's not the guy. He's not even the second guy. He's just a part. He's just a part of the offense, right?
Yeah.
And so it's hard to be like, I'm going to come back at this level that I was when like you don't even
role.
Yeah, you don't have that same opportunity. So I do think when you actually like look at what he does on the court and his numbers in the box score, like he's quite an efficient basketball player. Paid to be more than just an efficient basketball player, right, but helpful. We spoke a little bit about Brooklyn, about KD, about Kyrie, one of the most talented duos in the NBA. We have not seen them play together. We have seen Kyrie in the Nets, and there is no more Kenny Atkinson. And they have already discussed the fact that Steve Nash is more of a coach in the metaphorical sense.
Yeah, by name only, basically.
Yeah. just he's not really.
Coach Nash, and coach is put in quotations.
We could all coach, right? But roster-wise, they're really good. When you have Kevin Durant and you have Kyrie Irving, you have Caris LeVert, you have Spencer Dinwiddie, if he ends up staying, you have Jared Allen, you have a free agent in Joe Harris. I don't know what's going to happen. I doubt they keep him.
Philly.
That would be so nice. Philly, go get Joe Harris, please. But like roster-wise, this team is legit. Whether they can like stay uncomplicated and Kyrie Irving doesn't stir shit, that's a whole new thing. Because Kyrie Irving's talked about how excited he is to have a teammate who he trusts in the fourth quarter to take the last shot. But does Kyrie Irving really want a teammate who takes the last shot?
How would he know? He's never had one before.
It is so interesting though, because it's Kevin Durant. It's the guy that when we last saw him
was the best player on the planet.
Yeah, he's like, you know, when we're comparing AD and KD earlier, I was like, well, if KD was on that Pelicans team for the entirety that AD was, he would have had more playoff series wins than one.
Yep.
You know, because he can do so many things by himself. So hopefully he remembers that Kyrie needs an elite superstar more than KD needs Kyrie.
It'll be midway through the season, and KD will realize how good he had it with Steph and Clay.
Damn, that Nets team culture is in danger. A team with really good team culture, the Toronto Raptors. I've put them down as a contender here. I don't really know how I feel about them. I think in worrying news, their most productive, their best postseason player was probably Fred VanVleet, who made $9 million this year but is a free agent this offseason. And there's teams like the Knicks who like to throw money at people like Fred VanVleet, who average just under 20 points a game. They still have to pay Kyle Lowry $30 million next year. Pascal Siakam was a disappointment in the postseason. That's just what he was. OG Anunoby was exciting. He showed flashes of being a two-way player after being kind of a defensive star for the first portion of his career. Do they need to keep Fred VanVleet if they want to contend for a title next year?
I don't think they do. There's so many diamonds up in Toronto. I think the big question is going to be, can Siakam figure out how to carry a team to wins? Or are, for another year, they going to sit back and rely on Nick Nurse to get them through those holes? And if Siakam can be the player that we saw playing alongside Kawhi, maybe take a little jump from that player, I think you have to consider them in the chat, because they continue to find efficient, long, athletic, two-way players. And that's going to be hard when you come to the playoffs and you have to verse 10 guys who are all really good.
One name we haven't mentioned, Kyle Lowry. I know I rag on him.
I'll just mention him now.
Oh, okay, sorry. Well, he's I don't think they can win because he's their best player and he's getting older, right?
Like 34 now, right?
Why are they going to win next year if they didn't win this year would be my question.
Yeah, it's weird because, like, you mentioned we need to see Pascal learn to take over games, which he was doing in the regular season. He had, like, just a shocking bubble, which I don't know if that's just, like, a one-off and he's going to be the guy we thought he was through the regular season. There's a bit of change up to their core, or there might be. Marc Gasol's an unrestricted free agent this year. Serge Ibaka's an unrestricted free agent this year, I believe.
Has Marc Gasol already agreed to a deal in Barcelona?
There was that report, but they've come out and, like, denied it. So I don't think that's happened yet.
Okay.
But there could be changes to what this Toronto team looks like. A lot of the key pieces from that championship team. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see if Nick Nurse has the magic still, I suppose.
I think we saw enough from players like Norman Powell and Boucher to step into those roles where if they lose Fred VanVleet and Marc Gasol, I think they'll still have enough.
Serge Ibaka's unrestricted as well.
Yeah.
Did you already say that?
Yeah.
Sorry, dude. That's my bad.
Here's a quick hot take. OG for most improved.
Okay.
I love it. Him or Jeremy Grant, who would you want to see win it more?
100% OG. 100% OG. OG won't even have to take that big of a leap, right? If he averages like 18 points a game, that's big. It's a big leap.
It's a massive leap.
It's a big leap. But I mean, like, he doesn't have to average 25 points a game to win it. Are those all the contenders that I listed? Have we missed anyone out?
No, I don't think so. What about Utah? What do we think they are? Because, like, they probably would have gone through if they had Bogdanović, no?
Right.
And yet we're saying Denver's a contender. Are we writing Utah off too early?
Are Utah going to win an NBA title?
Denver?
Denver, at least they got to the conference.
Denver
finals.
Have that guy. They've got Jokic.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah.
True.
Utah have...
What about Portland?
Sometimes Donovan Mitchell.
Do not mention Portland to me.
Yeah, well, that Portland... Not having Portland in there is why I wouldn't have Utah in there.
No, Utah are much more likely to win an NBA championship than
Much
Portland.
More likely?
Much more likely. Paul, we know what Portland is. They do the same thing every year.
Not every year. Last year they made the conference finals. I don't sneeze at that.
Yeah, but... No.
It's tough to do, to finish in the top four teams in the universe, Gardiel.
I'm kind of with you. They're always there, but they're never there. Like, they're there.
They have the team.
The conference finals they have isn't the there. It's kind of there.
They have the team to get there, but they don't have the team to win there.
Yeah, and come back and bring it home.
Mm.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's worrying when your best player is Carmelo Anthony.
Then we're talking trash. Then it's out of Lakers, Clippers, and...
Warriors.
Yeah.
Dallas.
I love how high you are.
East can just stay in the bubble.
You used to be a Steph Curry hater, and now you're betting the Warriors to win.
I wasn't a hater. I was a hater of his lovers. I think I still am.
So you hate me?
Yeah.
That's fucked up. Okay, well, I think that will do us for this week. So we are still trying to figure out what our plan will be for the off-season, guys. We're probably going to take a couple weeks off after the NBA season because you guys are done with basketball for a little bit. You can go out in the sun. The weather's turning nice. That's not true, actually. It's going to rain for the next week if you're in Sydney, which kind of sucks. But please have a little break. Have a little hiatus. Watch some movies. Ted, you got a recommendation?
Lovecraft Country is a good series. I wanted to say The Boys, but everyone's already onto that. So
I am onto that now.
I haven't seen it.
Lovecraft Country's good, man. Something different.
Okay. Well, before you watch Lovecraft Country, please leave a 5-star rating on iTunes if you do listen to us and if you have enjoyed our coverage of the NBA season, which has been weird. And at times, I mean, we changed podcast name.
Yeah, we did.
Midway through this season. So if you stuck with us, and you're listening right now and you've never left us a review, please do so. 5 stars, okay?
And if you have left us a review, delete it, write a new one, even nicer.
Yeah, I back that. Otherwise, we will be back in a couple weeks. Thanks for tuning in, guys. Catch ya later.